The Rishis taught that ideas survive in the Akashic field as memories. You and I constantly access Akashic memory when we assume that we are accessing our brains. In esoteric circles, Akashic memory functions to give us information from departed spirits and past lifetimes. In Jungian psychology, the same memory accounts for cultures sharing the same myths and archetypes. Venus and Mars are invisible beings, yet present and alive. The Akasha remembers every god created by humans and every epic battle, romance, and quest. We tap into them all the time as the human story continues from age to age. The brain has a locatable memory center, but mind isn't confined to the brain. Consider a deeply meaningful experience in your life, a first kiss, or the last time you saw a beloved grandparent. That memory is the remaining trace of an event in time and space. The experience can still be activated in your brain, which means that millions of molecules that could be flying randomly through your neurons know that they have to stay together in order for your memory to continue year after year without fading. How could they know this, since molecules aren't intelligent? The physical basis for memory as yet is totally unknown to neurologists, so we can only speculate. Somehow, your first kiss has an afterlife. The afterlife isn't physical because there's absolutely no difference between the hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon in a neuron and those same elements in a tree, a dead leaf, or decomposed soil. Neurons aren't immortal. They die just as the rest of the body does, and atoms fly in and out of them every second. How then does a memory get transferred to a new atom, or to a new neuron when the time comes for the old one to perish? No physical process for this has been identified, so perhaps memory actually persists on a non-physical level. Neurologists would defend to the hilt the opposite idea, that mind arises only in the brain, using CAT scans and MRI imaging to prove the point. But those images are only maps. They show the terrain of the brain as an idea or emotion crosses it. They don't prove that the brain is the mind any more than a footprint in the sand is the same as a foot. The neurons involved in choosing the right word for a tiger don't run through the alphabet till they get to T. They don't sound out words, one syllable at a time, nor do they leaf through a zoological photo archive to match the right word to the right image. Instead, the correct brain activity arises simultaneously. The brain is acting like a field, coordinating different events at the same time, except that we know the brain isn't literally a field. It is an object made of seemingly lifeless chemicals. A compass needle moves because it's responding to the Earth's magnetic field. What if the same thing is true for the brain? What if the mind field is sending signals and billions of brain cells arrange patterns in response to what the field is saying? A team of innovative scientists has proposed exactly that. Henry Stapp, a theoretical physicist from Berkeley, Jeffrey Schwartz, a neuropsychiatrist at UCLA, and Mario Beauregard, a psychologist from the University of Montreal, have crossed disciplines to formulate a workable theory of quantum mind that may revolutionize how mind and brain relate to each other.